These materials are used in the educational program of a local church. That procedure is logical and right. But suppose for a moment the Sunday School Board were supported by cooperative program gifts and it were illustrated by the red stripe at the right side. That would mean that a church, through contributions, would have already paid for at least a part of what the Sunday School Board would in turn manufacture and sell because it had already made a contribution for that phase of the board's work. For the Sunday School Board then to take that mission money to produce commodities which in turn would be sold back to the churches would mean that the same customer would be paying twice for that which he received. Once out of the left-hand side of the church budget and once out of the other side of the church budget, and it would be unfair to the churches as well as to those who have made their mission offerings to follow that plan. This very fact illustrates another principle which we need to notice. That is that mission contributions going out of the mission side of the local church dollar, and this is an illustration, to the Foreign Mission Board, it constitutes a designated gift which moves out to the foreign mission field as the red arrow above indicates. But when that same church buys materials from the Sunday School Board, it pays for it out of the local side of the church dollar. And where there are earnings in that transaction, those earnings go back to the local church in its educational and service program.
Dr. Sullivan, is the Sunday School Board's work limited to the activities which go on in a church building?
No, the Sunday School Board's work reaches back into the homes in the preparation of lesson materials as well as the building of worship experiences and wholesome attitudes in the lives of Christian families. Believing that the Christian home is a major unit in the building of a Christian society, the Sunday School Board has built a very strong ministry to the home. The circulation of Home Life magazine indicates the outreach and success of that endeavor.
Dr. Sullivan, how has the inflationary period in our nation's economy affected the periodical prices of the Sunday School Board?
This chart, which we have chosen to call the Battle of the Budget, shows what has happened since 1941 in the ascending economy of American business. We notice at the right that labor in the general printing industry of America has increased 164%. The cost of paper in that same period has gone up 103%. The Baptist Sunday School Board, by persistent effort, has succeeded in keeping its literature prices to only a 61% increase, which actually is a relative reduction. In passing, it's interesting to notice that the Sunday School Board's quarterly, which you hold in your hand on each Sunday morning, represents such tremendous proportionate paper costs. In fact, the paper of that quarterly costs more than the printing of the message on the quarterly which you hold.
My question is this: how does the Sunday School Board harmonize its work with the work of state conventions and associations?
In order to see this cooperation, let us take a brief glance at a graph showing the working relationship of the churches. Our first picture shows a local church, the major unit of this denomination. As I have said before, a local Baptist church is the headquarters building for everything Baptists do. It has been learned through experience, however, that one church operating alone cannot support a seminary or a college or a hospital or a foreign mission enterprise. Those activities must be handled by groups of churches working together on a volunteer cooperative basis. To see how the Sunday School Board works with the states, it is best to review Baptist polity for just a moment. Only then can we see the operating principle. The most elementary of the cooperative organizations, as we all know, is the association. This chart is to illustrate how churches work together, electing messengers to the association, and so controlling the activities of that association. It is not accurate in technical way to say that churches belong to associations. Rather, the association belongs to the churches. Let us go one step further now, and we see how these churches, which working together in an association, also work together with yet other Baptist churches in a still larger body, which forms the state convention. Now take one further glance at the ever-increasing complexity of our denomination's organized life. This, of course, is not a strict organizational chart. It's rather a simplified graph for purposes of illustration. It's not complete in its presentation because the lines would be so many that they would be confusing. Those same churches, however, working together within the state convention, also work with still other churches of other associations and still other state conventions in a cooperative endeavor that we call the Southern Baptist Convention. And this is where we come into the picture as a Southern Baptist Convention agency. And let me say parenthetically that we can see also how each Baptist body is a complete autonomy and how the associations do not make up the state conventions, the state conventions do not make up the Southern Baptist Convention, but the association, the state convention, the Southern Baptist Convention are all on a level and each is controlled by the same churches and each is an autonomous body. Now, when we refer from left to right, Association, State Convention, and Southern Baptist Convention, we usually use the word areas of cooperation. But when we speak up and down, we can speak of levels of Baptist life. The only level is that the church is ahead of all of them and over and above and controls each and every one. Now, this quickest summary of Baptist polity has been given in order that we might again see the endless confusion which would obviously result if the agencies of the Southern Baptist Convention went directly to the churches recommending one type program, and if the associations went with another type program, and the state conventions went with another type program in the educational, promotional, and missionary work. It would produce endless confusion in the churches. Therefore, for the sake of harmony and coordination, the Sunday School Board, an agency of the Southern Baptist Convention, does its work in very close cooperation with the 27 state conventions and the 1,084 associations. Our method of cooperation is through appropriations to the states and services to those states and associations in the areas of Sunday school, training union, church music, and Baptist student work. It's rather interesting historically to notice that the first $1,000 ever earned in the Sunday School Board's history was assigned to the promotion of Sunday school work in cooperation with the state conventions in the above manner. That precedent was begun with the beginning of the institution, and history has verified it to be a thing of wisdom and effectiveness because Baptist growth has exceeded that of other denominations which have followed other methods.
Dr. Sullivan, what are some of the services which are rendered to the churches by the Sunday School Board?
Let's get some quick glances here. First, we see the church library service, illustrating the marvelous work done in helping establish church libraries where books are known and read, and the excellent reading materials are circulated among the people so that they might better understand the Bible and the various Christian truths. Another ministry is the Church Architectural Service. Here we see a portion of the staff of the Department of Church Architecture, their draftsmen, architects, and a department secretary working together in the preparation and design of suggested floor plans for church buildings. Just as a cucumber will take the shape of a jug in which it grows, an educational program is going to take the shape of the building in which it is placed. If the building is not geared to the educational program of the denomination, the church is spending money for something which it cannot use in its fullest and most economical manner. Another service is the Research and Statistics Department area. Here we see two of the workers tabulating information about Baptist life, keeping record of the pastors, where they live, what their churches are accomplishing, recording the number of baptisms, the work which is being done in Sunday school enlistment, training union enrollment, church music participation, and all other phases of the denomination's life. Here we see the Church Recreation Department mailing out literature dealing with that subject, trying to assure the churches that the recreational program of the denomination will not be competitive in any sense with the educational program or the worship experiences, but will undergird them in every way. The Dargan Carver Library is the inside library, and it's used also in cooperation with the Historical Commission in storing historical documents of tremendous value. It has become one of the greatest repositories of Baptist historical documents in the world, as well as an industrial research and editorial library for our employees.
Dr. Sullivan, tell us about materials that are classified as supplies, and does the Sunday School Board handle many of them?
Yes, the Sunday School Board handles items which run into the thousands. Count them in the Master Key Catalog, and you will see our difficulty in keeping a constant inventory, having all of those items constantly available. Though the Sunday School Board does its diligent best, it faces a complex and gigantic assignment in this regard. I'll just say that it's mighty hard to outguess these Baptists. It's like trying to guess which way popcorn's going to pop next. We have to operate so many months in advance, and to plan right now how many quarterlies will be bought by Baptists 9 months or 12 months from now, when the presses have to be scheduled and the paper purchased, is anybody's guess. And with them growing in such tremendous fashion, it's difficult to stay ahead. But here we see a picture in the merchandise sales section showing something of the volume and content of our work.
And Dr. Sullivan, where does the Sunday School Board have its printing done?
Most of the printing is done in Nashville, but before answering that question, I want to remind you again of what I said yesterday, that there's as much difference between publishing and printing as there is in weaving cloth in a textile mill and then painting a picture on that canvas in an artist's studio. At the beginning of the Sunday School Board, Dr. J.M. Frost declared that the Sunday School Board would not be a printing institution, but a publishing house. The board's periodicals are printed in Nashville in the printing building, which it owns itself. It is a 2.5-acre plant at the edge of the city. The printing is done for us by contract printers who own the presses and who for quite some years have produced our materials. This is a picture of the press on which the artistic covers are produced.
Wouldn't it be better and cheaper for the Sunday School Board to own its own printing presses?
Oddly enough, doing printing by contract is cheaper for a religious publishing house than owning its own presses and attempting to do its own work. And many of the major denominations have discovered this fact the hard way. Under state law, a welfare institution is forbidden from using its presses in doing outside printing without being subject to taxation. That means that the large presses would be dormant in between the quarterly rush periods when they're printing their quarterlies. Unable to use the presses constantly then, depreciation on million-dollar presses would be staggering and financially impossible. With the setup under which the Sunday School Board is operating, we contract for our printing with one of the largest printing industries of the South. Our work gets priority and an excellent job is done. On those hours, the presses are not busy running Sunday School Board materials. They're busy running other materials, which means that these other publishers are paying that tremendous depreciation cost on the presses, which we would have to be paying if those presses were dormant. Here we see the end of one of the giant presses, which will hold 6 spools of paper simultaneously, each spool weighing approximately 2,000 pounds. Because the paper runs through furnaces of white hot heat, it is impossible to stop the presses without the paper going immediately into flames. So these are web-fed presses geared for constant running, and the red glue being placed on the spool by the man visible in the picture is an instantaneous glue so that the spools can be synchronized when the presses get to the end of one roll. And the instantaneous glue immediately takes effect and the presses continue without stopping. They run night and day, 6 days a week, stopping only to change type. And under that method, the Sunday School Board is enabled to get a quality job in the most economical manner possible. It happens so fast your eyes cannot even see it, but it's an interesting sight. In this picture, we see some of the assembling machines putting together the various sections called signatures.
Interesting sight.
Placing on the covers, stapling the trimmings, the quarterlies, so that they are in final form. It's a wonderful thing to see the invisible, was what I was trying to say.
Someone has said that the Sunday School Board is now purchasing or building some locations for Baptist bookstores. Is this true?
Yes, the Sunday School Board discovered that more than $250,000 a year was being spent in bookstore rentals. Also, we were losing some of our leases for good downtown locations. Let me say that in one city, a man bought a piece of land, built a bookstore building, leased it back to us. In 10 years, we had paid him the rent, which paid for the land and the building, and then we lost the lease. And we just didn't believe that was good business. Because of these problems, the Sunday School Board decided that it would start a gradual, long-range program of building purchases for bookstores which are well-established but are not housed in state convention office buildings. We'd rather be with them if possible, but in many instances we can't. And here we see a picture of the store recently completed in Jackson, Mississippi. This is a picture of the new store in Charlotte, North Carolina. You'll also notice that parking facilities are made available adjacent to these stores wherever possible. Already, Baptist bookstore properties have been acquired in Kansas City, Jackson, Mississippi, Charlotte, North Carolina, Phoenix, Arizona, as well as Nashville. The rest of the stores are in lease buildings. That situation must continue until the board feels that it's in a financial position that it can afford to make this movement move further.
Dr. Sullivan, what services are rendered by the Sunday School Board in behalf of special or handicapped groups?
Illustrating this ministry, we have the fingers of a man unable to see, searching for God's truths through the Braille Baptist. This is the publication produced in two grades of Braille and sent to any blind person or church on request without cost. This ministry of the board has been in operation for a number of years. The board also, of course, produces special lesson helps for the deaf, and they're to be ordered with a regular literature. These materials are made available to the churches which are ministering to this group who have more limited vocabularies.
Tell me something about the employees of the Sunday School Board. Are they all Baptists?
Well, the employees of the Baptist Sunday School Board are Baptists with but very few exceptions. Out of 1,277 devoted employees, only about 10 are not missionary Baptists. Most of these were added during the war and in periods when the stress was so great, we had to have people of rare technical skill and we couldn't find a Baptist to do it, and so we broke over and employed someone else. But altogether, they number about 10. Southern Baptists are used exclusively, however, in editorial positions and in field responsibilities. The non-Baptists are used in the industrial side. Here you see a picture of the employees in Nashville attending a typical Friday morning chapel exercise at the Sunday School Board. It's taken, of course, from the balcony.
Tell us what you're doing at Ridgecrest by way of enlargement. We are interested in that particular phase of work.
All right, this picture illustrates what we are trying to do on the grounds at the present time, showing Pritchell Hall in the center and the auditorium in the lower left. This picture was taken in the wintertime, of course. These had to be so you could see the building, otherwise the trees would have concealed them. The circle to the right illustrates a new dormitory which is just being completed and will be used for the first time this summer. It is in the upper right-hand circle. The building in the central part of that circle is a dormitory that is now being remodeled on the ground. The building just above the circle was built last year for purposes of central supply. You understand that with 26,397 registrations already in for this coming summer at Ridgecrest alone, that thousands are being turned away already. And you can imagine the pressures under which we operate at the assemblies. And let me interject here the utter impossibility of solving all the problems. A few years ago, our dining hall was too small, so we enlarged it. Then the auditorium was too small. We enlarged that. Then we didn't have enough housing units, so we built more of them. Now we got back and the dining hall's too small. It's like a fellow having a pain in one joint and he takes it as long as he can. He takes a pill to shove it over in another joint and it stays there a few weeks and he takes another pill to shove it somewhere else. We can't solve the problems. We just shift them around. But each time we hope that we can handle more people and do a better job. The long rectangle to the left shows the children's building in its strategic location to the auditorium and the housing units. The auditorium was doubled in size 5 years ago. You can see a slight change in the coloring of the roof there. The black rectangle in the lower left locates the new contemplated educational building. It is now in the early stage of planning and will be erected as soon as the Sunday School Board feels that it is able to finance it. New roads have just been cut through the mountains in the back in order to relieve congestion and to give circular traffic. This summer, a new water system is to be in full operation, to be completed. We've had it in stages of development simply because it was costing us multiplied thousands of dollars, but we had to have it in order to meet the supply and to give fire protection. The new children's building at Ridgecrest is one of those in which we're justly proud because it is used so meaningfully in the teaching and training of teachers and workers. Its value will be felt throughout the entire convention. The inscription reveals the significant purpose of this children's building. The quotation, "Suffer little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven," Matthew 19:14.
Is it not true that the Sunday School Board operates youth camps also?
Yes, this is true. Camp Ridgecrest for Boys was begun more than 30 years ago. Over the main gate at this camp is the inscription, which is every boy's prayer: "God, give us mountains to climb and strength to climb them." We've taken this picture in order that you might see what has recently been done at the boys' camp. The square at the top shows the infirmary, which is virtually new. It's modern in every respect. The circle shows Roger's Retreat, which is the place where the boys go for the quiet time, the reading time, the worship time. It too is new. The black rectangle in the lower center positionizes for you the tabernacle-type building, which is under construction right now for use on rainy days so that activities will not be interrupted by bad weather. Here is a picture of Camp Crestridge for girls. It's virtually new, and in many ways, it's much more modern. Resting on the mountainside is the dining hall, the large building, which is in the lower center. The nest of cabins in the upper right is for juniors. The group of cabins to the left is for the seniors. The black rectangle there shows the location of another building which is needed and planned, but which we'll have to await erection until we have funds available. It's the activities building, which includes the gymnasium. It's desperately needed now, but we'll have to await some other time.
Will you tell us something about Glorietta and what you're building and doing there?
Nothing thrills us more than to see the development of the assemblies. Here we see one of the first pictures, or one of the early pictures of Glorietta. It shows the beautiful terrain, the high mountains that stretch thousands of feet upward. And by the way, the lowest spot on the grounds of Glorietta is 7,500 feet above sea level. You also see the new interstate superhighway that runs from Santa Fe up to Denver, passing through the pass, along with the Santa Fe Railroad cutting through the Glorietta Pass. The Sunday School Board accepted this assignment from the convention as a challenge and has gone about the development in a very methodical way, trying to work out the planning with the greatest of skill of which we are capable. Here we see a closer late evening view of some of the buildings which are now in use, and Glorietta is able to care at the present time from 12 to 1,500 people each week. We're building, of course, toward an ultimate capacity of 5,000 people a week, and there are certain weeks where we almost need that now. Some of you have not had the opportunity of seeing the Glorietta Gardens, which are maintained primarily through the contributions of the people who attend the assemblies. We want to give you a quick glance, and the flowers there are exceedingly beautiful.
Does the money for building the assemblies come from Ridgecrest and Glorietta earnings?
No, there are no earnings. Rather, the exact opposite is true. It's always a deficit. There's only one way you could operate the assemblies at a break-even point, and that's to do what the Florida hotels do and charge a resort price. And the moment you did that, Baptists couldn't come, and so you might as well adjourn and go home. There's no way to make them break even. Imagine our Baptist colleges operating summer schools only, financed by tuition, and then having to pay the faculty 12 months in the year and keep the campuses up 12 months in the year. That's exactly what we're up against at the assemblies. It can't be done financially without resort prices, and we can't resort to resort prices. So there's nothing to do except accept a deficit. We have whittled it down where this year we had the smallest deficit in the operations of the assemblies we've had in our history, and that was $87,000. It is true that New Mexico Baptist, Texas Baptist, Oklahoma Baptist, Mr. William Fleming, and others have made designated gifts to the buildings at Glorietta. Without these, we do not know what we could have done. But for every $1 received from every other source combined, the Sunday School Board has had to invest in the buildings there more than $12 for every one received from other sources. Here you see the children's building, which is now under construction at this present moment at Glorietta. It is not only to care for the children who attend the assemblies, but the primary purpose of these children's buildings, along with its observation booths, is to train the teachers and workers who come there. It's to teach by demonstration.
What are some of the buildings you now have at Glorieta?
This aerial view will show what we have done and also what we're trying to do. The corner of New Mexico Hall, the administration building, is seen at the left. Texas Hall is at the top left-hand corner. It's a dormitory. Oklahoma Hall, another dormitory, is at the right of Texas Hall. The chapel and its surrounding conference rooms are in the center. And the children's building, which you just saw in the picture before this one, is under construction at the right, and this picture was taken about 2 weeks ago. Not shown in the picture are other new buildings now under construction. There's Cactus Hall, the new, Cactus Hall, which is the new housing unit for staff boys. A new wing is under construction this very moment for Yucca Lodge, the girls' staff building. And there's also a men's dormitory building, which is being completed.
Dr. Sullivan, what are the present urgent needs at Glorieta?
Let's continue to look at this same picture for just a moment, and I think I can show you. The needs there are so many that it's hard to know where to begin. Continue to study the picture then. Even after the children's building at the right is completed, we see that more conference wings must be added. The square at the back of the chapel limits us in our conference space at the present time. As you see also, one wing is missing still from Oklahoma Hall at the top right. You notice the wing has been built on one side. We haven't had money enough to build a wing on the other side. Two more wings are due on Texas Hall in the upper center to make that building an inverted U-shaped building. By far the most expensive is to be the auditorium, yet to be built but already desperately needed. And we simply have not had the money to build it. You'll see the space just in front of the green wall there on the level ground in the front center is where the auditorium is to be built. We are meeting now in the chapel, which is just above that. The green wall is a part of the chapel building, but the main auditorium will come just in front of it. Other illustrations of desperate needs are the two L-shaped wings that go on New Mexico Hall, the administration building, which is in the center of this view. These wings will house the registration booths, offices, bookstores, gift shops, barbershop, and things of that nature. At least one wing is urgently needed now to give us some relief. Also, there are tourist court type housing units and more roads and utilities which are needed urgently.
Please tell us about the properties of the Sunday School Board in the city of Nashville.
After all, this is the main operation of the Sunday School Board, and if it is not kept advancing, all else is retarded. In order to get a bird's eye view of the Nashville properties of the Sunday School Board, let us look at this drawing by one of our artists, and these are buildings that you own and you operate. It illustrates the relationship of all of the downtown buildings in Nashville. Of course, the printing plant is 4.5 miles out on a 27-acre tract of industrial property, and we couldn't show it here. This is the downtown operation. Beginning now at the bottom center, you see the Frost Building, which is in itself across the avenue from the other properties. It faces 8th Avenue. Immediately above it is the old shipping building, which is soon to be remodeled for office purposes after the present operations building, now under construction, is occupied and completed next year. The long central building running up and down in the center is the administration building. It's 12 stories high at the front. The smaller buildings round about on each side are temporary buildings, for the most part, which have been purchased as emergency measures to care for us in these periods of stress when we had so much volume that we simply could not handle it in the square footage which had been owned and occupied by us. Now, what I want to focus your attention to especially is the large building at the top that runs across this picture. It is the new operations building that is now under construction, and it shows its relationship to the existing buildings and will be connected to it by an overhead bridge across the street. It is 886 feet in length and approximately 238 feet wide. It will have 14 loading docks that will handle trailer trucks on the avenue facing 10th Avenue. It will have railroad sidecars on the upper side so that we can load either by rail or truck simultaneously. It will give us a very efficient operation, and we should have this building ready by the middle of 1959. The cost of the building will run between $4.25 and $4.5 million.
Why is such a building needed?
That question is asked, why do you need this building? Well, we're showing you here just one small segment of our operation. This is one segment of the periodical shipping. Not only is this area congested, but the loading docks are too small for efficient use and cannot be enlarged, and this is one of the 9 operations to be housed in the new building. And let me say parenthetically just here, if you can't grasp the volume of stuff that goes out from the Sunday School Board, let me say that Washington is the largest, has the largest second-class mailing of any post office in the nation. Nashville has the second-largest mailing of any second-class matter in the nation. And the Sunday School Board is the largest customer of the Nashville Post Office. The postage bill alone last year, when you take every area of the board's operation into account, was $678,000 for postage alone. It's very difficult for the average Baptist to realize the volume as it goes out into all 48 states and 75 foreign countries. The volume is so tremendous that just meeting the bills of the Sunday School Board and staying even costs us $92,500 a day in bills every day without one penny of appropriation through this convention. So you see something of the tremendous business responsibilities which we carry daily.
Do you have a picture of the building now under construction so that we can see what it will look like when the first unit is completed?
Yes, I do have. I want you to look at this picture here of this building in the first unit. We're looking at it from the rear side, showing how the railroad sidecars will go up under the building for loading purposes. The roof will also be used for parking purposes, and it'll park 350 cars on the roof. The administration building of the board is the white building just to the left of center, the tallest building in the picture, so you can see its relationship to our existing buildings. The colored part at the left shows the office section supporting the 9 operations which will be housed in the other part of the building, which is the yellow part. On this side of the building, you see only one story of the operation, but when you've gone across 4 tracks, the building then sits on the ground and becomes a 2-story building over the rest of that property. This first unit will give us 2 stories for occupancy next year.
Doc Sullivan, did I understand you to say that the operations building has already been started?
Yes, this is the way it looked last week. This is a brand new picture. Because of the immense weight of paper, this building is being erected to carry 500 pounds of live load for every square foot. That makes it equivalent to a 30-story office building. The first unit will reach from the point where the photographer stood to within a few feet of the white building in the distance at the far side. Ultimately, the building will extend 3 full city blocks, and we own the white building, too, which eventually will be replaced, but it was under a lease at the present time. That means that we will reach from Church to Broadway, the 2 main streets of the city, and the building will face both of those streets.
Someone has said that you're laying foundations if taller buildings are needed in the future. Is this correct?
Yes, I want you to take a look of what this building is planned to become in the ultimate future, though we're building only 2 floors at the present time. You're looking at the building from the opposite side now, and the type of structure which can someday exist, and it'll be after my time, can be erected on this present foundation. The overhead bridge shows how the new building connects with our present building at the rear. The office part is being planned to carry 12 floors, the industrial part to carry 5 floors. That means that this first unit is more expensive than it would have been otherwise, but we felt it to be good business to prepare for the future as well as the present, and we're trying to render a good account of our stewardship. There will be in this first unit 309,000 square feet of space in the building. In these pictures, we've tried to give you a very hasty, though somewhat fragmentary picture of what the Sunday School Board is, telling how it operates, what it is seeking to do, and how it is seeking to do them. It is not an easy thing to discuss the many phases of work in so brief a time because the Sunday School Board is working in the vast religious education field of the local churches and is engaged in such diversified responsibilities. It must be kept in mind that the Sunday School Board is dealing with people as it serves the churches and with the memberships of all age groups in those churches. If it could be kept in mind that the Bible, the Word of God, is the textbook, the very center of teaching, the Sunday School Board can be positionized in its work and understood in its endeavors. An open Bible, a local church, and the masses of men who need to know and to love and to heed the blessed book, that is our task and aim, to reach them. It is our contribution to the kingdom in this time, in the name of Southern Baptists and for the glory of our God. And thank you so much.
My brethren, there is a motion made and seconded that this report be adopted. Dr. Sullivan, is there further discussion on the motion? This completes your presentation. If you would favor adoption of the report, would you make it known, please, by saying aye. Opposed, no. Motion's carried, and we thank our beloved secretary for a very graphic and informative presentation. Brother Secretary.
There are very urgent emergency messages for Thomas Lyde and Wallace Martin. The Committee on Boards will meet at 1:50 p.m. back of the platform. Let me remind you again of the lost and found desk in the foyer, and Harold Jones will be relieved to know that his wallet has been found.
Brethren, I believe you are aware of the fact that we are a few minutes ahead of time. That's a little bit unusual. May I have the privilege of saying just a word for Brother Noel Taylor and myself? You wonder sometimes why we are inflicted on you, but do you recognize the tremendous pace and pressure under which our president is operating? And we simply are trying to relieve him momentarily, to give him a brief bit of respite. And I'm sure you will indulge our frailties as we come to give him a moment of rest now and then. The next item on the agenda for our program this morning is that which is scheduled at 11:20. Before I announce it, could I ask if the secretary from Florida, Dr. John McGuire, is in the building or in the sound of this voice, would he come to the platform for a message, please, Dr. John McGuire. The next in order, then, is the Committee on Church-Related Vocations by Brother Alan W. Graves of Kentucky, the chairman. Dr. Graves.
Mr. President. We're happy indeed to come now to present to you the report of your committee, appointed originally at the Kansas City session 2 years ago, to deal with this important and urgent matter of finding a larger supply of dedicated, consecrated, God-called men and women to serve in the churches, on the mission fields, and in our denominational agencies, in the various church-related ministries. I should like to call your attention to pages 317 and 318 of your book of reports. If you have your copy along, I would like to ask that you turn to these pages and note the report of the committee as you will find it there. This has been a hard-working committee, a dedicated group of people representing many phases of our Baptist life and work. And I believe you would like for me to express to the members of the committee your appreciation of the hours of diligent work which they have done. We have worked in close association with the agencies represented on the committee and with the Association of Southern Baptist Colleges, who appointed a special committee to counsel with us in the operation of this committee. Mr. President, I should like to move that we receive this report and that the committee be dismissed.
Is there a second to that motion? Regularly moved and seconded that this report be received and the committee dismissed. Is there any discussion, Brother Gray?
Mr. President, I would like for you to give attention to the report as it is printed in the Book of Reports, particularly to the final section of that report, in that it represents the work largely of the enlarged committee appointed at last year's session. The matter of recognition and status for those serving in church-related vocations. These closing paragraphs represent the best thinking of those in the committee and others with whose counsel we had given, whose counsel we had taken into consideration in a statement that we believe would represent what you would have us say. We would like also to express our deep appreciation to the agencies of the convention who have been most cooperative in gearing the resources of all of our Southern Baptist life, in calling attention to the need for more church-related vocational workers, and in giving to our people, both young and old, adequate information and inspiration to lead them to commit their lives to doing the will of God. Those of you who read our Southern Baptist literature, as all of you I'm sure do, cannot help but be impressed with the vast amount of material that you will find in the curriculum publications, in the promotional magazines, in all types of literature coming out from our boards and agencies, the state conventions, the state papers. All of our Baptist life has been giving attention to this important matter of helping young people find the will of God for their lives. And yet, the need continues to grow. Those of us in the seminaries and in the colleges who are training educational and church music workers could report to you how many times we have been stopped in these halls to say, I need an educational director. I must have a minister of music. Can you help me find a youth director? That is an ever-present and growing problem among Southern Baptists. You're aware that the Foreign Mission Board will not be able to appoint as many missionaries as they would like to appoint this year. Why? Largely because we do not have enough qualified candidates ready to go. For these reasons, though we are asking that the committee be dismissed, the work is not done. And we prayerfully urge that you continue your concern and that each of the agencies continue their effort to keep this important matter upon the hearts of our people, that we will pray for more laborers as Jesus taught us to pray, and that we will continue to counsel with our young people as we seek to help them find the will of God in their lives. We're grateful to the Training Union Department for the promotion this year of Vocational Guidance Week. I hold in my hands here the four study course books which you taught, many of you, in your churches this year. God Calls Me, Christ in My Career, Is This My Life, When I Grow Up. Thousands of copies of these books have helped people, young and old, find their right relationship to the will of God. We hope that if you have not yet taught these books, that you will do so, perhaps even this summer. And in the coming years, you will continue to use these materials to help your young people and the adults in your churches to discover God's will for their lives. We want in these remaining minutes of our brief report to call upon some of the members of our committee to tell of the significance of this emphasis upon church-related vocations in the various areas of our Baptist life. First of all, we should like to call upon Mr. Elmer West, a very faithful and hardworking committee member, to tell of the significance of this emphasis for the foreign mission program of Southern Baptists. Mr. West.
Thank you, Dr. Graves. You just heard Dr. Graves say that the Foreign Mission Board is not by any means able to appoint as many missionaries as we urgently need each year because we do not have enough qualified young people who are ready to go. One of the most significant things connected with the work of this committee on church-related vocations and the highly effective beginning of the work of Mr. John Tubbs as the counselor for church-related vocations is the enlargement of the reservoir of young people who are committed to God's leadership in church-related vocational work, which includes, of course, foreign mission service in its many and increasingly varied aspects of training and of emphasis. We recently did a survey of all the missionaries appointed in the past 5 years, and we found that approximately 3/4 of them said that they had made a prior commitment of life to God's leadership for some church-related vocation before they took the next step of commitment to God's leadership for foreign mission service. This is very significant, and it is directly related to this total approach which we as a convention are making today. I believe that 10 years from now, when we become more aware of the expansive work of God's leaders, both at home and around the world, in bearing witness to Christ, we will look back upon the work done by this committee, and much more, the work begun by Mr. John Tubbs and the Sunday School Board, and say this was the turning point to a greatly enlarged ministry in the name of Christ to a lost world. Thank you.
Next week, we should like to have Miss Helen Gardner of the Bellevue Church, Memphis, tell about what is being done in that great church through a program of vocational counseling and a church-related vocations committee. Miss Helen Gardner, the secretary of our committee.
Mr. President, Dr. Graves, messengers and visitors of this convention, I come from a local church giving you just a picture of some of the work of the Committee on Church-Related Vocations in our own church at Bellevue Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. At the beginning of this year, I went before the Committee of Committees and asked them to appoint a group of choice men and women among the finest and the best prepared in our church to set up the Church-Related Vocations Committee of our church, concerned with the encouragement of our young people, staying close to their hearts, giving them information concerning the many opportunities open not only in our church, but in the association and in the churches of our convention and for our denomination's cause. All of these opportunities for service in church-related vocations. And the committee felt that it was an important time in the life of our church concerning our young people. Therefore, the committee selected a group, carefully selected men and women, well prepared in counseling, in guidance of our young people. It has been heartwarming, as I have worked very closely with this committee of our church, to observe their interest and to see their work. This committee has worked individually in counseling and also with larger groups. May I tell you recently of a career night we had with our young people, the young people who had felt God had called them to a special place of service. And these young people met at the Youth Center with the committee, for it was under the direction of the Church-Related Vocations Committee of our church. And we were there with our pastor, Dr. Robert G. Lee, who was also on the panel, and others in our church. And as we sat there and had a panel discussion, showing our young people the needs, giving them information as to all of the opportunities in our denomination, as well as in our churches, the mission field, the preaching ministry, the religious education ministry, the music ministry, the youth program, and so on. And as they listened, there were some there who had not felt the call of the Lord, but had dedicated their lives somehow to a special service, but had not felt that they knew, I should say, as to where God would have them serve. At the close of the panel discussion and conferences with individual members in that group, one young woman rose and said, "I should like to join the 12 in our church who are already volunteers for foreign mission service, because I feel that God has definitely called me to the foreign mission field." And so, Dr. West, you see, we have a new recruit recently as a result of this committee's work. And so with the information and with personal counseling, with the opportunities before our young people of what they can do, working too with their parents, because sometimes parents do not have the vision of the bigness of the task in the unfolding days ahead as far as our young people's work is concerned in giving their lives to the fullness of God's call. And so this committee works with parents as well as with young people. And Dr. Sullivan, we plan to bring a busload of these young people to Nashville that they might see the many opportunities open there for service. I could wish with all my heart that churches throughout the length and breadth of our great Southern Baptist Convention territory would set up similar committees and get close to the hearts of young people, that we might encourage them to follow through, that their purpose may hold in the commitment that they have made unto God.
Thank you so very much. Do you have someone from your church preparing for Christian service in a church-related ministry? We want now to present Mr. John M. Tubbs, the Church-Related Vocations Counselor of the Sunday School Board, a position created at the request of our committee and its executive committee. And we want him to tell you something about what is being done now for these who have committed themselves to a church-related vocation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Graves. It has been a genuine pleasure to be associated with the staff of the Sunday School Board during the past year in the launching of this new program in the area of church-related vocations. I would hasten to point out, however, that this is not a program of the Sunday School Board as such. Rather, it is a convention-wide program carried on in cooperation with all of the agencies of the convention. And what wonderful cooperation we have had from Mr. West and Mr. Cody in the Personnel Department of the Foreign Mission Board, from Mr. Griffith and others at the Home Mission Board, from the churches as a whole, and from every other agency of the convention. Everyone has joined hands in a very marvelous way as we have sought to give guidance to these young people whom
God is calling into places of church-related vocational service.
You'll be interested to know, for instance,
that since the 1st of June last year,
we have received the names of more than 3,700 young people who have volunteered for places of church or denominational service. Each of these individuals has received an individually typed letter expressing our interest in them and offering to help them with their preparation. To many of these have gone letters to the pastors and the parents as well. In the future, we will be sending letters to all parents and pastors of young people whose names are received by us. To facilitate this matter, a uniform commitment card has been developed in cooperation with all of the agencies and departments of the Sunday School Board who have responsibility for carrying out assemblies in the convention. Copies of this will come to our office and will be processed there, and in turn we will be able to keep in more closer touch with these volunteers. Along with this, we're in the process of publishing at the present time a series of 32 tracts on individual church-related vocations. 8 of these will be ready by the 1st of July, and others will be ready later during the summer. Dr. Graves has called attention to the publication and use of the very fine vocational guidance books published by the Training Union Department this year. Dr. Aubrey Hearn, who serves in the study course division of the Sunday School of the Training Union Department, indicates to me that more persons will have studied this series of Training Union study course books on vocational guidance than any other series yet published by the Training Union Department. Another very encouraging aspect of this work has been that of the state conferences for church-related volunteers held by the individual states. Last year, for the first time, under the sponsorship of the Training Union Department of Tennessee, more than 200 young people came together at the State Assembly. This year, 4 states have had similar conferences. Tennessee has had a second conference. Florida has had their first conference, and their attendance, incidentally, ran over 700 young persons from all over the state. North Carolina and Kentucky will also have similar assemblies this year for those who are specifically interested in church or denominational service. We covet your prayers in this great work. We urge you to send us the names of those who are responding in your own churches. Let me remind you of one or two things that have been said here from this platform during this very fine convention. Southern Baptists are launching out to organize 10,000 new churches by 1964. But I wonder, my friends, if you and I have realized that every one of those new churches will require an additional pastor. We are barely preparing enough pastors at the present time to care for the normal turnover in the 30,000 churches we now have. But here comes the call for 10,000 more pastors. And along with them will be needed ministers of education, ministers of music, church secretaries, age group workers, and so on. Dr. Cawthon challenged us not only to think in terms of meeting the advanced program goal of 1,750 foreign missionaries, but to go on and think in terms of 2,500 foreign missionaries. And how Dr. Courts Redford thrilled our hearts last night as he challenged us to think in terms of the Home Mission Board program with its needs of more than 300 every year. And our hospitals and our schools and others are in need of these additional workers. How we thank you and how we urge you to send us the names of these young people that we might help to prepare them and guide them as God leads them.
Question is upon the motion that the committee report be received and the committee dismissed. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and it is so ordered. Chair recognizes next Brother Courts Radford, who will report for the committee on our relations with the Canadian Brethren.
The official name is the
Canadian Southern Baptist Conference.
And the conference report will be submitted by him.
Brother President, if you will turn to page 3 of your convention bulletin, you will find in the last hand, right-hand column, the report of this committee. Before reading this report, I would like to give a little of the background of the report. Last year, the convention authorized Home Mission Board to appoint a resident missionary in Canada. The Home Mission Board appointed Reverend W. Bertram King to reside at Toronto and to serve as a liaison worker with Canadian Baptists. I want you to know, Brother King, and I'm asking that he come at this time, just bring a word of greetings. Brother King,
Mr. President, Dr. Redford, since last October, I've been going not the length, but the breadth of Canada, bringing greetings from you all to all the Baptists of Canada, from Vancouver clear up to the Maritimes and New Brunswick. And now I reverse that and bring greetings from all the Baptists of Canada to all of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's been a great experience. I've been speaking in pastors' conferences, in churches, and we'll be speaking in their conferences from the Western Baptist Conference, the Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritime Baptist Conference. They've asked me, interestingly enough, you'll be interested to know, to speak in one of these conferences on Baptist distinctives and how Southern Baptists have maintained them. It's been a glorious experience, and I've met very wonderful, devoted Christian people along the way, and I bring you greetings from them at this time.
Thank you, Brother King. I think you understand that this joint committee conference, the Southern Baptist Convention and Canadian Baptist, made up of several groups. There are four from Southern Baptist on that committee, or were last year. Honorable Brooke Hayes, Porter Ruth, James Sullivan, Coach Redford. We met twice during the year. We met first at Edmonton last October, at which time we conferred with the three Baptist unions which make up the Baptist Federation of Canada. Also, a representative from the group of Southern Baptist workers that are affiliated with the Washington and Oregon Convention, they were represented. And at that time, invitations were extended to other Baptist groups to join in this conference. At the next meeting, which was held May the 5th this year, some of those other groups did send representatives. Namely, the Baptist General Conference of America, which is the Swedish Baptist group, and North American Baptist General Conference, which is the German Baptist group. And now the Fellowship Baptist of Canada have indicated that they would like to join too in this conference. So that you can see it, practically all of these Baptist groups in Canada are joining in this joint conference in helping to outline and promote work of Baptist in Canada. I should like to read just one or two paragraphs from this very fine letter we have from General Secretary of the Baptist Union of Western Canada, Reverend Frank Patch, in which he expresses something of appreciation of the Canadian Baptist for this program. He says, "Will you be good enough to convey the Christian greetings and good wishes of the Baptist Union of Western Canada to your messengers and delegates at Houston?" He goes on to say, "All across Canada, our ministers, churches, associations, convention offices have taken the initiative in arranging groups to meet and confer with Reverend W.B. King. In these conferences, we've been happy to welcome and to work with brethren from any and all Baptist groups." And then again, he says, I am omitting some of it,